Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. This is part two of our discussions related to the tragic 9 firefighter line of duty death in Charleston, South Carolina. We are approaching the one-year anniversary. This show actually should be posted during that particular time, June 18th. We're recording this just a few days earlier. Today is June 10th, but typically the show will be posted and left up for a while. And specifically, we are honoring the 9 firefighters who were killed as we look back 1 year ago to Charleston to understand and study what we can learn better to what happened there. You know, people are, there's a lot has changed and a lot hasn't. It's interesting to watch what's going on in Charleston. And certainly the Charleston Fire Department of today is not the Charleston Fire Department of a year ago, only if only just for the fact that 9 firefighters tragically and unnecessarily lost their lives. That's not to take away the fact that they were heroes. They were heroes for the lives they led. Unfortunately, the way they lost their lives was unfortunate and, as we've all learned, completely avoidable. And to honor them and to honor their lives and to honor them as heroes and the heroic lives that they led, we're going to continue our discussions today with Gordon Rowley, Chief Gordon Rowley, who led the Charleston panel as contracted by the mayor of Charleston. Gordon, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Billy.
And we've got Chief Mike Chiaramonte. Mike specifically focused, as a part of the panel, on the issues of fire prevention, pre-fire planning, and basically all the things we can do before the fire starts. And Mike, welcome back as well.
Thank you.
We're going to spend a couple minutes with these gentlemen, but I mentioned a few seconds ago that looking back, and I wonder just, and this is strictly editorial from my part, looking back at where the Charleston Fire Department is now. And I'm having difficulty saying the Charleston Fire Department because it sometimes seems to me there's two Charleston Fire Departments. Those who support the administration, those who don't, those who support the mayor, those who don't, those who support the union, those who don't. And maybe there's more. And that may but not be specifically to Charleston. There's a lot of fire departments like that. But it just seems that it's really come out more in Charleston. And I'm watching so carefully, as I think all of us are, to see, look what happened. For example, the fire chief, just weeks before his retirement, decides to do a number of promotions, a number of transfers. And whether or not they were directly related to people who were or were not his supporters, the appearance of that really stood out as a, oh, my goodness, type of an issue. And as one firefighter said to me from Charleston, what more can he do to hurt us? And I don't know if that was a fair statement or not, but it certainly impacted a very fragile organization as well. We're watching to see the mayor, to see who he's going to hire as his fire chief and who that fire chief will hire as his deputies or her deputies. Hopefully, the mayor will give the new fire chief the authority and responsibility to run the fire department, and the mayor can go back to being the mayor, and hopefully that's kind of where it's going to go. And even more importantly, hopefully the person picked as the new Charleston fire chief, the new head coach of this team, because this is a team that has incredible capabilities of winning the game. It's just the coaching staff let them down, And it's time for a new coaching staff now, and that's what we're getting ready to watch and see as the mayor works on his decision on who he's going to pick as his new fire chief. So as we'll go forward this morning and talk rather a little bit more factually now as opposed to editorial with Gordon and with Mike. And there's a couple areas we're going to focus on today. One is the process of rebuilding and moving forward, and specifically the Charleston Fire Department. And Gordon's going to chat with us for a while on what specifically is being done to rebuild and move forward, while, of course, never forgetting what happened. And the term never forget, we've heard it so many issues of so many years, whether at 9/11 or Worcester or Keokuk, Iowa, wherever there's been a substantial loss of firefighters. But never forgetting needs to be more than words. Never forgetting is taking the lessons learned and applying them so we don't repeat history. And there's been few comprehensive reports as the one that Gordon and his and Mike and their fellow panelists did, then the Charleston report, that really, if it's taken seriously and if the new fire chief comes in, I think I was talking to you, Gordon, or someone, I think it was Gordon, I said, you know, what's the next phase? And the next phase, of course, is to implement your report and the recommendations in that report. And in my mind, I envision the new fire chief at Charleston coming to work. He sits down on his desk. There's nothing on his desk except maybe a computer, a phone, and maybe a radio. And the only thing else on his desk is phase two of your report with a note from the mayor saying, "Dear Chief, please do this. Love, Mayor." And I can imagine that, at least in my mind, that really is part of the solution. Just take the report and do it. So, Gordon, why don't you share with us what's going on as far as rebuilding today and most recently and moving forward within the Charleston Fire Department. And after that, we'll go to Mike and talk a little bit about pre-fire planning and specifically how pre-fire planning and prevention could have avoided this tragedy. So, Gordon, I'll turn it over to you for a few minutes.
Okay, thanks, Billy. I think we're right in the middle of a very major transition that's going on in Charleston, and it coincides with a change that's occurring in the leadership of the department, and it also coincides with the one-year anniversary of the Superstore fire and the loss of 9 firefighters. The department has been through a really traumatic year. It's hard to imagine anything more traumatic than losing 9 members of your department and everything that's associated with it. And clearly there's been a lot of focus on the incident and what went wrong and who to blame and who's responsible and a lot of taking sides. I think we're at the point now where that has to be put behind people, and I think it will be effectively. I think maybe getting past the one-year anniversary where everybody can focus on honoring the memory of the 9 lost members of the department, and then turn and look forward and say, it's time to start rebuilding and really making the Charleston Fire Department into a really dynamic leading organization for the future.
Gordon, I think that's the common denominator. What you just said is, and I mentioned earlier in my little editorial comment about how it's such a splintered group. There's this side that likes this, there's that side that doesn't like that. But I think everyone in the Charleston Fire Department, certainly the folks I've talked to and have written to me and I've chatted with personally, everyone agrees they just can't wait for this new coach to get on board to lead us forward.
Yeah, I think I think it's going to be a really exciting opportunity for the members of the department and for whoever is coming to be the new chief. Because just as you say, it's almost like coming in with a clean slate and saying, figure out what needs to happen and go ahead and implement it. So I think that for a progressive fire chief coming in, that's a golden opportunity, and equally so for the members of the department. That everybody agrees that changes have to be made and a lot of progress has to be made. And recognizing it's going to take some time. This isn't going to be an overnight transition. This is probably going to take a couple of years to fully implement the changes that need to occur. But as long as everybody is looking forward, I think that's going to make it a lot easier and a lot more positive for everybody.
What are some of the components of rebuilding in your whether it be in your report or what you've started to think about for phase three. And for those listening to our show, phase three is basically how to get phase two done, and the costs affiliated with that and the logistics. Am I correct in that, Gordon? Is that pretty much what phase
three is? Yeah, phase three is really the development of a strategic plan to implement all the recommendations that came out of phases one and two. When we started off, we recognized that we were probably going to have a significant list of recommendations coming out of the first two phases. And it would take a strategic plan to lay out a path for implementation. So, you know, we're probably not going to get deeply into the strategic planning until a new chief is on board, because, you know, it would be, you know, pretty foolish to go out and develop a strategic implementation plan and hand it to a new chief coming in the first day and saying, you know, we did you a favor, we did the strategic plan before you got here.
Sort of like making promotions and doing transfers prior to leaving office.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to comment on that. That's my comment.
Okay.
Billy.
I think what we need to
No, Mike, wait a minute. Mike, no, I'll discuss this with you if you want. I think it's totally inappropriate. I think
can't make a comment.
No, I'm not asking you to comment. I'm not asking you. That's why I said it's my comment. I think it's completely inappropriate when you know you're leaving office to do anything other than to keep this ship stable, allowing the new chief to make his decisions or her decisions. And I saw a very similar comparison when Gordon mentioned about doing the strategic plan. Including the new fire chief as a part of that only makes sense because the new fire chief is going to have to lead that plan. So, and we've seen this before, whether it's in the military or we see it in the fire service, or even some mayors, before they go to office, they take care of their friends. And whether that's what happened or not, that's certainly what was implied and what was read, and that's my only reason for the comment. I just don't think it's right. This is a hurting department, and if there was any healing going on in certain areas, that reopened old wounds. And I'm not in the chief's shoes, and I don't ever want to be in the chief's shoes in that situation. And I pray for him and think about him regularly. Gordon and I have had some pretty good discussions over how tough this has to be. But at some point, when you realize you're leaving, you need to leave and leave it alone, because it's going to be even that much tougher. So anyway, that was just editorial, not asking you guys to say anything, obviously, toward that. So, Gordon, specifically, what are some of the key issues you see in rebuilding, or some of the higher levels or the higher priorities?
Well, there are really two aspects that need attention. One is, you know, the operational aspects, because we recommended some really major operational changes, you know, things like going from 2.5-inch hose to 5-inch hose, you know, reconfiguring apparatus, a whole new emphasis on incident command and all of the aspects that come with it. So really major operational changes in the department. But at the same time, the internal organization and structure of the department has to change in order to support, you know, all of those operational changes. Because really, as we look, you know, as we look back and say, what was the problem leading up to June 18th, 2007, to a large extent, it was the fact that the departmental infrastructure wasn't there to keep up with the times. So the department was lagging behind on training and procedures and equipment and all of those other things. So the organizational structure and capacity has to be in place to support moving the operational end of the department forward.
Now, Gordon, so, you just made a good comment on that. They didn't realize that where they were. And I guess my thumbnail response to that is not realizing where they were is by not seeing what other organizations are not doing, not keeping up with current standards, things like that. What can you recommend to departments to do? And Mike, you can comment on this too, because certainly it would apply to fire prevention, modern practices and positive practices for fire prevention. But what do you recommend a department do so they don't suddenly find out they're far behind what the rest of the majority of the fire service is doing? How do they do that?
Well, I think it's really important just to stay current with where the fire service is going, to read, to read the publications, to stay current with everything that's available on the internet, to attend conferences, to attend classes, to be involved with the National Fire Academy, to be involved with organizations, to see what's going on and the changes that are occurring, because there's new information coming down the pipe faster and faster all the time. So it's a significant challenge, but an absolute necessity to stay current. And it's easy to fall behind by just being complacent and not paying attention to what the rest of the world is doing.
One of the things, Billy, that I significantly noticed about Charleston, and I honestly don't think it just applies to Charleston, they seem to have been a little isolated. And by that, I know that I get a tremendous amount of information just by being exposed to other firefighters and fire chiefs and people that are in different types of organizations in the fire service. And again, reiterate what Gordon had said. I mean, just going to these conferences, going to the National Fire Academy, going to places where fire chiefs from all areas of the country are, and attending the classes, of course, but sitting down and discussing and talking and hanging out with them, this gives you so much information, as you know. And I found that with Charleston, there was very little, if any, of that had ever occurred. So the only thing they knew was Charleston, so they didn't get or understand or hear all of these other things that are going around. And you know, from hanging around at these conferences and stuff, that we get tons of great information just from talking to people.
So they just got kind of comfortable with their own way, and I guess because nothing particularly dramatic had gone wrong, it becomes accepted, and there's no need to go outside. I mean,
and
maybe
it's not unusual for other departments around the country to be that way. And
right.
I think we all need to encourage that exposure. You know, the part that really gets me is, of course, money is tight, and the city managers are really not liberal enough to let these fire chiefs and other officers go to some of these conferences and things. And it's not a vacation if you go there correctly to learn.
Right, right. Okay. Go ahead. All right, Gordon, back to you with the idea of rebuilding. So the issue of getting out and learning and seeing what others are doing, whether it be on an unofficial capacity, such as just attending conferences and meetings and things like that, but also keeping up with standards and changes and studying what other departments have gone through. What are the thoughts on that?
Well, I think, that's part of the transition that's almost inevitably going to occur in Charleston in the near future, is that there will be, a new chief, almost definitely someone coming in from the outside who will be bringing an outside perspective. They already have a training officer who came in from the outside. Chief Gee came in from Fairfax County, Virginia, and brought a new perspective into training.
Pretty positive responses to that, too, huh?
Very positive. I think it's been very well received. And, I think that's a good indication of what to expect if you look at the whole department changing in the same way. So there will be the outside influence coming in, and I am sure that you'll see a lot more of Charleston Fire Department people going out and interacting with other fire departments and the National Fire Academy, the State Fire Academy, and everywhere else to get those ideas. One of the messages I get pretty clearly from the mayor is he wants to have an exceptional fire department looking down the road. So he's willing to put the resources into it to see the change occur.
He has so far. I mean, he really has so far, and I'm sure there's those who would debate that. And I understand his fierce loyalty to Chief Rusty or whoever else works for him. But I also think he does have the big vision that I think he clearly knows where he wants his fire department to go. My concern, and I mean, it's my concern is not of any real interest to him or anybody else, but that once he has this new chief, he's going to stay back and let the chief run it. But didn't he pretty much let Rusty run the department? He was kind of hands-off mayor until this tragic situation came in, wasn't he? Didn't Rusty run that fire department?
Well, I can't tell you in detail how things
sure.
happened before we got there, but I think generally that's true.
Good.
And I think the mayor also had a lot of confidence in the department. I think he honestly thought that he had the fire department that he talked about.
And, I agree with you, yes.
And, part of that came from all of the emphasis that was placed on the ISO Class 1 grading.
Right.
That was interpreted as being, well, if you're ISO Class 1, you're as good as you can be, so there's really nothing to be concerned about. So, I think the mayor now sees the gap that existed and not only wants to fill the gap, but wants to jump out ahead. And he has been just, absolutely forthcoming with the resources to fix every problem we've identified since we've been involved. I said to him on a couple of occasions, where were you when I was a fire chief?
Right.
Because I would come to him with, something and say, well, this is probably going to cost $500,000. And his reaction was, where do I sign?
That's outstanding.
Yeah, I think, there are an awful lot of fire chiefs and an awful lot of fire departments that would love to be in that position. So,
but to get in that position, you probably have to suffer such a tragic loss that they did.
That's really a tough way to get there. It's not the way we want to go about getting there. But I'm really confident that the support is going to be there for the new chief and a new team taking control of the department and really trying to make the difference.
Very good. Gordon, moving forward, we talked a little bit about equipment and getting out there and learning, rebuilding, and moving forward. Let's talk for a few minutes from your perspective, and Mike, you can certainly chime in as well. The rebuilding and moving forward of the people. We can buy equipment, we can buy tools, we can buy gear, and as I see, the mayor's doing all the above. As you said, he's writing checks and wants the best. But how do you move forward I guess I'll phrase this in two parts. One, with an organization that really is the yeas and the nays, we support this, we don't support that, the union, non-union, and the emotional tie that all of them have. In other words, the common denominator, whether they like the union, they don't like the union, whether they like the mayor, don't like the mayor, the common denominator is every single member of the Charleston Fire Department had the wind knocked out of them. What's being done to help them move forward in that aspect?
Well, you're right as far as having the wind knocked out of them. There are 250-plus members of the department, plus retirees and families, and everyone had the wind knocked out of them. And everybody's hurting. That comes out in different ways, but everybody is really hurting. One of the positive things, I think, is the effort that's gone into providing support for the members of the department. The whole counseling operation that's been set up originally with National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, now it's transferred over towards being managed by the South Carolina Firefighters. The FDNY counseling unit was heavily involved in it. So there's a lot of outside support and a tremendous amount of community support. So I think that's positive as trying to deal with it as well as can be expected. But I think everybody knows it's going to be a difficult period going forward. That people are always going to remember what happened that night, and it's going to be traumatic for a lot of people. I think once we get past the first anniversary, maybe it'll start to be easier for people to stop looking back and really look forward and say, now we're on a different track. So, those nine will never be forgotten, that's for sure. That night will never be forgotten. But I think if we can focus energy forward on the future, everybody will do better.
All right.
And I think that the change has to be communicated. Each little change has to be communicated very well with the accompanying training, and most importantly, the answer to why we should do it this way.
That's a great comment, Mike. Yep. That's
just right. We're changing because it's the right thing to do. They're very confused right now, and a lot of changes are being thrust at them quite rapidly. You have to ease up a little bit and give them the why. And I also have tremendous confidence that when we get into that strategic plan, involving them in creating the department vision, mission, and values will get them together on one track.
In other words, let them have participation and have some buy-in to it, so some ownership in that.
Yeah, and they'll know why they're doing what they're doing with the vision,
right,
mission, and value.
But it sounds like there's going to be there'll be the master planning sessions, and then there'll be, and if they do it the way I think most of us think they probably ought to, and hopefully they want to, there'll be a lot of mini groups out there working on specific things to bring back, and hopefully everybody at whatever level they're at will have an opportunity to participate in that master plan. And as we've seen, a lot of organizations have master plans, but then there's the master plan, and then here's the way we operate. This master plan truly has to be their document to move forward to the future. Let me ask you a question. Before we get on to talking about fire prevention and pre-fire planning with Mike Gordon, the ISO issue, and I've got a history with ISO. I worked for them for 5 years. I'm very familiar with how the grading schedule operated. Back when I was in there, we had the older grading schedule, but I understand how it works and what we did when we'd visit with a fire department. And back when I was with ISO, which was in the early 70s, we actually did pump testing. We actually saw things. And today it's a lot more paperwork. Anything that you're aware of as far as ISO, what their responses are to what happened in Charleston? You know, a lot of people are slamming ISO. And if you look at ISO for what it is and you understand what it is, it isn't that way off base. They may have had a Class 1 fire department based upon the things that the ISO grading schedule calls for, but it's not reflective on how a fire department necessarily operates as a whole. For those listening to the show, ISO is a for-profit organization that supports insurance companies. I'm correct. It's for-profit, right, Gordon, or is it non-profit?
Yeah, ISO is a private for-profit organization.
Yeah, a for-profit organization, and they are basically in the business of providing information for insurance companies to determine what's risk levels, I guess, is really what it is. And the assumption from an insurance company would be that if the lower ISO class number you have, the better risk it is for you to insure in that community. Is that a fair thumbnail description?
Yeah, the bottom line is ISO provides information to insurance companies that allows insurance companies to decide what kind of rate structure they want to use for different risks and in different communities.
Right.
So it's really an information gathering and processing system. A lot of people don't really understand what ISO is, and up until as recently as 10 or 12 years ago, it was really about the only game in town as far as evaluating fire departments.
Right.
So, people looked at the ISO rating and said that was the yardstick that everybody used. I think now we realize that it is a measure that's used for a specific purpose. But it's for insurance companies, and it's used in the process of establishing rates for property insurance. For instance, there's nothing really in that system that talks about life safety. There is nothing in that system that specifically looks at firefighter safety. It's all based on property protection and the resources that a fire department has and the capabilities a fire department has to protect property. So it's a pretty narrow focus.
Sure. You can't speak for ISO, but you may want to share your opinion or your thoughts. How has this fire impacted ISO? And are they re-looking at the way they operate, or are they saying, look, what we have is what we have? Don't misinterpret what an ISO grade means, or what? What do you think?
Well, I think both of the above are correct to some extent. I've had several conversations with ISO, and I know they've done a lot of looking at Charleston and looking at the system and asking themselves if there were problems. And at the same time, I know that there are changes in their process underway. I think some of them are already underway, just updating some of their measurements and processes. So I think maybe this is, provided a little more incentive to move forward with some of those changes. So I think they also have tried clearly to communicate that, what we do is gather information for insurance companies. We're not the ultimate judges of the effectiveness and up-to-dateness of fire departments.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah, I kind of wondered because I figured they would. I mean, from the involvement we've had, including you guys with ISO at the IFC and some other things they've been involved with, pretty upfront. Looking to do the right thing kind of group, and the misunderstanding of what an ISO number means got tied into a lot of what we read about in Charleston, and there was some slamming of ISO, but I'm not sure ISO did anything different than they normally do. It's just a lack of education and misinterpretation of what the number means to perceive that as being a grade one or a class one fire department. Yes, within those categories, they had the paperwork and they did the testing and what have you and had the equipment. But overall, it's certainly not the only way, and it's certainly not the ultimate way to evaluate a fire department's effectiveness.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate in the case of Charleston that the department and the city maybe put a little too much faith in the Class 1 grading and really didn't consider a lot of the other aspects that should have been looked at.
Right. Also, a lot of confusion between ISO and ISO, where businesses and organizations, which is what
International Standards Organization.
Standards Organization, which is not Insurance Services Office. Two completely separate things. Well, listen, we're talking with Chief Gordon Rowley and Chief Mike Chiaramonte. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is radio@firehouse.com, a very special issue of Through the Smoke honoring the 9 firefighters who lost their lives in the line of duty in Charleston and moving forward on this anniversary of that tragic loss. So not only the Charleston Fire Department can learn and improve, but so all of our fire departments can learn and improve as well. We'll be right back.
Radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
Welcome back. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. You're listening to Through the Smoke, and I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're talking with our friends Gordon Routley and Mike Chiaramonte, representing the Charleston Fire Panel, the Routley panel, if you will. It's become to know that, and I know Gordon is sensitive to that, but it is what it is. That's what people have gotten to know it as. And we've been talking with them about where Charleston goes from here, and also with that, there's an asterisk on where we go from here, all of us. And we've said since the initial discussions of an investigation came out following last year on June 18th, the fact that we're all going to be able to learn from this, just like all the other line-of-duty deaths. The key is to not repeat history. You know, I'll never forget that evening. I was in my kitchen at home. My cell phone rang. A friend of mine who runs a very popular website down in South Carolina, scontfire.com, scontfire.com. It's Grant Mishew. And I think Grant's dad is very involved in the counseling unit down there, too. Isn't that correct, Gordon?
Yeah, he's the head of the counseling program.
Yeah, he's a good man with a big heart, working very hard to help his brothers and sisters there in Charleston heal. And Grant, who runs a very informative website, SC on Fire, called me and he says, "Are you aware of what's going on?" And I've been watching my pager, so I knew something was going on. And his phone calls got worse and worse and worse. And he was starting to relay it to some of the other great tragedies of our time. And, man, it certainly sort of it fits in. Where were you when President Kennedy was shot? Where were you when Martin Luther King was shot? Things like that. Where were you when the trade centers were attacked? And where were you when the Charleston fire went down? And I remember it like it was yesterday. And just in shock and sadness and grief. And here we are a year later. And change is happening. Certainly lots of emotion, lots of feeling, lots of anger. But as you guys have said earlier, it's time to look forward. And with the common love of the Charleston Fire Department amongst the members and whatever they perceive the Charleston Fire Department to be is enough reason for them to move forward to honor those who were lost in line of duty. So, Mike, let's chat with you for a couple of seconds regarding pre-fire planning and prevention. How about sharing with us some thoughts? And I know some of this is in the report, but maybe it'd be easier if you would just kind of explain some of it. What you identified as the problems with pre-fire planning and what recommendations you've made for the Charleston Fire Department to change as far as how they do pre-fire planning and fire prevention, too, if you'd like to share that as well.
Yes. First of all, this tragedy is so clear-cut an instance of how fire prevention and fire prevention programs and the three E's of education, enforcement, and engineering come to play and are directly linked to firefighter safety. It is so obvious, and we'll get into this. First of all, this building could be in any community in the United States. This is not indigenous to just Charleston. When this report went out, the emails I got back from people around the country saying, "Oh my, wow, this could be us." Well, maybe one way of memorializing these guys is to look around and see if you've got something like this in your community. And by something like this, notoriously, fire inspection and fire prevention is minimally staffed. In the Charleston Fire Department, the fire department did not have anything to do with fire inspection or any kind of anything to do with fire prevention other than an occasional go to the schools and do a program when requested.
So, Mike, if the building department did the inspections, is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to.
I just want to make sure you make the connection of how do you communicate from the building department back to the fire department. Maybe you're going to identify that as an issue.
At that point, there wasn't any.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, there wasn't any. Even to the day of that fire, there wasn't any. Mm. So the building department, with South Carolina and going to the international building code, etc., they had enough of a population where they could make their own rules. So they took out doing fire inspections altogether other than complaints, change of occupancy, and basically new construction. So this building was sitting there for a number of years without anybody doing a fire inspection on it. The owner of the building... The owner of the building had done some work previously which required permits, but he put extensions and various things which you could see in the report without permits. He went so far as to have his employees do most of the work. And where the fire started was this non-permitted area. The non-permitted area in the report you could see was not proper construction. The non-permitted area completely annihilated the two-hour and the separation idea. When he put these non-permitted things in there and connected things, it then either required full sprinklers in all but one part of the building, but the major part of the building would be, or he would have to isolate those to two-hour separations. He put a room in there without a ceiling. Now, and then into that room from the fire room was a garage door without a door. There were tremendous amounts of flammables in there.
Okay.
All over the place. So there we have it. That's the scene. There were aerial photographs of the building way prior to the fire, with actual photographs of the unpermitted areas.
What?
Charleston did not have, and most communities do not have, pictometry in GIS, which simply overlays and you see a new footprint and you can pick that stuff up.
Right.
So that's one of the recommendations. And Charleston, I found out just 3 days ago from the building superintendent, who's in charge of fire inspection, et cetera, that they're getting pictometry to do that. Now you get firefighters that are going to walk in there and do a pre-plant.
Which,
well, they're not really
doing...
educated in any of this stuff.
No, they were
how
doing
many
pre-plants,
firefighters
right?
are.
Mike?
Yes.
The fire department was doing pre-plans, is that correct?
They did walkthroughs and made little sketches.
Okay, go ahead.
This sketch actually wound up in a book somewhere and wasn't even out at the fire. But
okay.
They went in. All this stuff existed, but they weren't educated to pick it up.
Okay. It's a training issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to send you to do a pre-plan, but who's taught you how to do a proper pre-plan?
Well, you know, they did, if you know, but they didn't pick up that this construction wasn't right, that they, that it just didn't have good exits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it went by them.
Okay, so you're saying they're going and doing pre-plans, but the education and training isn't there to also look out for outstanding fire prevention issues.
And all the flammables all over the place,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, while they're in there, they're
right.
not seeing that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what happened. Now, today, what's happening in Charleston is, number one, they felt, and with the team, that it was important that fire inspectors, who are building inspectors, would go into a building with the eye of a firefighter. In other words, if you see something that maybe may be code but would be something good for a firefighter to know if there was a fire in there,
right.
It would go on a CAD system, which they're doing right now, and an alert would go on.
Okay.
They recently hired a fire inspector supervisor, who has extensive firefighter experience. As a matter of fact, he's retired FDNY from a ladder company just about 3 months ago. And he did a tremendous amount of fire inspection work in upstate in a volunteer fire department. A very knowledgeable guy. So he's now making this liaison between the building and the fire department. So that's happening. Just on the 30th of this month, who has extensive fire department knowledge, not just to review the plan, but if that plan's reviewer sees something that should be interesting to a fire department, that, too, would be put on a CAD system. In other words, the main entrance is next to a boiler room or this
sure.
or that, or there's a particularly difficult configuration. So now we have two key positions that have been hired in Charleston to look at fire inspections from the eye of a firefighter for firefighter safety and to look at plans for firefighter safety.
So can I ask you a question, Mike?
Yes.
Something seems real obvious, or is just banging away at me here. Why don't they move this back under the fire department? I mean, really, the work they're doing is representative for the safety of firefighters. You mentioned it. Of course, we all know that fire prevention, fire inspections, and pre-fire planning is one of the best ways to save firefighters' lives. If they want to go in and look at things through the eyes of firefighters, why not take this segment of the building department, place it under the fire department, and maybe that's what the new fire chief will push for. Who knows? But is
well,
there any
right
reason,
now, the head
why,
of the
why
building,
wasn't it? Why isn't it? Was it at one time?
A long time ago, and then circumstances came about where it went the other way.
Okay. All right.
Right now, the person, see, Charleston, Billy, I would say, yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
But for Charleston, I don't think it's the right thing at this, because...
Interesting.
The person who's in charge of the building department really gets it.
Okay.
And he's a great guy to work with, and he's getting it, and he's pushing all these things. And with the liaison person that was recently hired, that's your link with the fire department.
Okay.
And there will be, it's almost like having the fire department run it, because the way this thing is now set up, there will be tremendous communication with every little thing with the fire department. And also there'll be some cross-training. What's in plan is that there will be designed a one-page inspection form with 2 hours of training, and each firefighter that goes and does a pre-plan will now have some inspection knowledge as well.
Okay.
Each building inspector will have fire knowledge. Each fire inspector will have building knowledge.
Okay.
All of this cross-training is about to happen there, and it's going to be one big unit. And I see it working really well for Charleston. Now, if you already have your prevention in your fire department, well, again, you still should teach your firefighters very basic what to see, or not to do an inspection, but to have a feel that if there's something you don't think is right, to call a fire inspector in there. And that didn't happen.
In this case, Mike, here, we saw the owner ignoring the law as far as him needing permits, a major factor, and we saw fire inspections not being done. Now, did I interpret that correctly? That
yes, you did.
They
the other thing
what,
is
when are they? Why are they going to suddenly start doing inspections now? They are going to.
Well, what they are going to, yes, and we're in the process of setting up a regular inspection. Similar to pretty much what would be a recommendation by the IBC and the IFC, which would be public assembly annually, and then accordingly we would have a schedule for commercial, et cetera, et cetera. And they're in the process of hiring a few more inspectors. That's going a little slowly. But eventually there will be a significant increase in the amount of inspections, and I don't want to let a cat out of the bag, but I'm thinking there needs to be an ordinance change where it would be required that these things get done.
Okay.
And I think
we'll
be able to get that.
Very good. So that'll be the muscle behind it, that not only do we want to do more inspections, but now the code says we have to do inspections.
Yeah, the local Charleston code, which
right.
The IBC entitles them to put in there, we'll get it. I'm sure we'll get it.
Okay, good. So they're going to increase some staffing there. They've got these liaisons, and it's what you say makes sense. If the people
thing, Billy,
running
is,
the building...
is going to be what was found out very much behind the scenes. Some of the residents. We're losing a little bit of faith in the fire department. And there's no reason to do that, because really they do a job with what they have, and they're okay about it. But we're about to embark on a public relations campaign that would involve the entire commercial industries, all of them, in Charleston. And basically to go on the Katrina idea, that the government isn't going to be there for you, and you know, right away, and what you need to do is take care of yourself.
Okay.
And even if you have the best fire department in the world, there's going to be damage with the contents and things that are in buildings today, which could impact your business, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going on a major campaign pretty soon with a conference with the Chamber of Commerce and all the business people. And that's coming around in a few months. We're waiting for the new chief.
To educate the businesses
the whole
on why,
community.
Why they don't want a fire.
That's right, and how to prevent it, and how to watch out, and how to take care of each other, and how to take care of themselves.
Well, you know, when we think about prevention, a lot of times firefighters do not equate that to firefighter safety because the mentality of most firefighters, and you and I and all of us to some extent, that, you know, we want to go on runs, we want to help out, we want to do our best. And getting involved in prevention is perceived as not exciting. And I know there are those listening to this shaking their heads in agreement. But the last thing you want to go through is a line of duty death like these folks went through. And if they could turn back the hands of time, what do you think they would do different in Charleston? And clearly, as Mike's talking, is fire prevention. If
well,
they
the mayor,
not,
the mayor has picked up on that 10,000%.
Good.
And the realization is there. The thing that we need to do to memorialize these guys is to get the rest of the fire service to open their eyes. This report clearly and so easily shows that fire prevention is a lot more than giving coloring books out at elementary schools.
Right, and Sticky the fire dog and all that stuff, right?
Which works and is good, and I'm not putting that down.
No.
But what fire prevention, you need to educate the businesses as well. So maybe this guy wouldn't have done what he did.
Right.
You also have to know right from here what you just said. This should not have even happened. One of the things that I find when we go talking about this thing is we start to talk about the fire prevention, and then immediately everything goes into the operations. What did the fire department do? Where was this line? Where was that line? Where was this line? How much water did they have? Did they vent? Didn't they vent? Did they break the windows? Didn't they break the windows? Well, they wouldn't have had to do any of that if there was just basic fire prevention practiced in this place. And those guys should not have died.
Right. Well, that sums it up right there, Mike. And I think if those would just pause for a minute. And again, look, let's not kid ourselves. As firefighters, we want to go on runs. It would be like joining a football team and never getting to ever operate on the field. But when you look at the – put it in perspective – and look at what's happened in Charleston and other places, but specifically today we're talking about Charleston. No one, from the mayor to the brand new Proby to the owner of the superstore, would ever want to go through this nightmare again, not to mention the families of these firefighters and the absolute suffering that these firefighters went through. And don't anyone listening to this story kid you, or this show kid yourselves. Listen, click on the link below here on the website, on the show site, and listen to the radio traffic. These are firefighters dying in the most horrific, most painful, worst way you can imagine. You just don't ever want to experience something like this. And that's why we have so much we can learn from what Gordon, Mike, and the rest of the panel have put together for us. I guess we just have to want to do it, right, Mike? I mean, that kind of where it comes down to.
What scares me is the remarks I've gotten from other people in the country that have seen this report, and they say, we're doing the same thing. We're doing what they did. We're not doing those inspections. We're not training our guys. We're not doing this. And we have buildings like that. Well, maybe you have buildings like this, and I'm sure you do, and they don't have to be as big as this either. But all the non-permitted things, the flammables, there were chained exits in this thing. They bricked over an exit wall. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And what do? We concentrate, and I believe in it on strategy and tactics and all, because that's necessary. But this and a lot of other buildings, tons of buildings in this country, are potential traps to kill firefighters. And we need to have that prevention element to make sure that our guys don't die. And the other thing is, we're not even talking about the millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars and pain and suffering in injuries.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the thought that you just mentioned about strategy and tactics, Mike, and strategy and tactics, our response in applying strategy and tactics is because something else failed, whether it was fire prevention or whatever the case may be, you know, arson or whatever, but something didn't work, and that's why the fire department responds. We go to things that are failing, or we respond to failure. Something didn't work, so therefore we have to be reactive and fix that. And we have to be at the top of our game to do that. But if the inspections have been done right, this gentleman who owned the store respected the laws and didn't try and do things a roundabout way, we wouldn't be talking today, and that's kind of what we're talking about. I mean, we could talk about strategy and tactics all day long, and that's certainly the sexy part of the job that we love talking about. But forget all that crap. Push it aside for a minute. Just think, as Mike said, about the cost, the emotional stress that this fire has taken, and not just the families of these firefighters, but every member of the Charleston Fire Department and the community as a whole. So, Mike and Gordon, as we wrap up the show, I guess I'd like to give you guys the opportunity to just kind of provide some final thoughts as we hear the week of June 18th, the one-year anniversary. So, Mike, your final thoughts, not only perhaps personal thoughts, but a message to our listeners as well.
Well, personally, as a member of the Fallen Firefighters Advisory Board, and you're a member of the board, Billy, we get to see so much of this firefighter death. And again, I reiterate, a huge problem of injuries. It's extremely frustrating to realize that a tremendous amount of these can be avoided. And when you get to look at these families and the impact, and it's long range. It never goes away. I implore everybody who's listening to this to look at this report. We were told by a lot of people that it's a good report. We were told that it's an easy read. And you can see in this report how fire prevention could have just stop this whole thing from even getting anywhere. And if he built that loading dock according to code, even if he didn't sprinkle the building but put the 2-hour separation and the ceilings and all that in there, it would have just been a loading dock fire. You've got buildings like this in your town, whether they be big or they be small. You've got these things around. There's a reason for the codes. They're not just pain in the necks for the people that own the stores and pain in the necks for the firefighters and the inspectors that have to go enforce them. They're there to save your lives, your brothers and sisters' lives. I am about as the most frustrated puppy when it comes to this particular fire because it just upsets me tremendously. Please go and look at your fire prevention program. Look at it from different eyes. Look at it from the point of view that by doing anything you do helps save you and your brothers and sisters. Please read the report. Please look at your fire prevention program. And please, let's not let this happen again. That will be the memorial to these 9 guys.
Outstanding. Thanks, Mike. Gordon, some final closing remarks?
Well, I really have to add to what Mike said. It's, you know, I can't imagine a worse feeling than going after something like this happens and seeing how we could have prevented it. So that's certainly an important part. But the second part is, you know, just a message to everybody in Charleston, if I can, to say, you know, let's honor those 9 fallen brothers and then let's move forward. There's an interim team that's in place to guide the department for the next several months until a new chief is selected and comes in. You know, let's everybody give them full support and really, you know, make a big effort to move forward and create the new fire department that we all want to have without forgetting the one we had in the past.
Thank you, Gordon and Mike. You know, your remarks, and Mike, I appreciate you today, especially focusing on the issue of fire prevention, which is so often the redheaded stepchild or the bastard child that nobody wants to talk about. But when you tie it into such a tragic event like this, it really could have been avoided through some good basic fire prevention. Past that, when you do run a response, or when you do respond, and this, I just want to share this with our listeners, whether it's the Charleston fire or a single-family dwelling fire you're responding to, size up the building. Use your pre-plans, use the information you have, but size up your building. Look and see what you have. Determine what you can do with what you have on the scene. Make sure that your response, that your first alarm, your second alarm, whatever's on the scene, can match what you want to do. You cannot operate in some of these buildings with the resources you're responding with. And in some cases, you could respond with 200 firefighters, and we still may not be able to operate inside that building. I'm not saying don't go in by any stretch of the imagination. I'm saying size it up and think. And when you do your size up at your next run, look at the building, look at what you got, and then look behind you to see what resources you have with you in order to deal with that problem. And don't allow your companies to go running blindly inside of a building unless you've got the resources and the staff support to make sure that they have a good chance of coming out of there. Not everybody goes home. Sometimes we have to die. Clearly, sometimes those in our business have to lose their lives when we're trying to save other people's lives. But in so many cases, in the vast majority of cases, we don't have to die. And that's kind of what we're talking about, not only in this show, but other shows we've talked about as well. You know, this fire was the worst single loss of firefighters since 9/11. And these nine brave, heroic, and courageous firefighters, I mean, let's face it, they were heroic and they were brave. They did exactly what they were expected to do that day. They didn't want to lose their lives. They certainly did not know the plan. Listen to the radio traffic. They did not know what the outcome was going to be, but listen to the radio traffic when you hear firefighters calling out to their wives and calling out their last messages and the pain and suffering that these men are going through, and they absolutely suffered. Don't minimize this. And the only way we can honor them is to take what Mike and Gordon and the others have done by taking this report, taking this information, taking what we can learn from the Charleston firefighters, those who have survived, and as the changes go forward, and apply them to our own fire departments as well. Captain William Billy Hutchinson, Captain Mike Benke, Captain Lewis Mulkey, Engineer Mike Kelsey, Engineer Brad Beatty, Engineer Michael French, Firefighter James Earl Drayton, Firefighter Brandon Thompson, and Firefighter Melvin Champagne will never forget you, and with any ounce of energy, without even having to try, your lives can be honored by simply taking the report that Mike and Gordon and the rest of the panel did and applying that so we can honor the names that I just mentioned. Our thanks to Gordon Rowley and Mike Ciarmani for joining us today. Again, thank you, Mike, for being here.
Thank you. Just have them listen.
That's it. And Gordon, thank you so much for all you've done as well.
Okay, thanks, Billy.
On the anniversary of the Charleston fire, 1 year, this is radio at firehouse.com. You're listening to Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Take care. God bless. We'll see you soon.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.